"The late Captain Sir Richard Francis Burton," he said, grinning slightly at the late. "Perhaps you've heard of me." She snatched her hand away, and then extended it again. "Yes, I've heard of you, Sir Richard."
Somebody said, "It can't be."
Burton looked at Frigget, who had spoken in such a low tone.
"And why not?" he said.
"Richard Burton," Frigget said.
"Yes, I wondered, but without any hair?"
"Yes,"
Burton drawled.
"Yes," Frigget said, "just as the book said.
What are you talking about?"
Frigget breathed in deeply and then said, "Never mind now, Mr. Burton, I'll explain later. Just take it that I'm very shaken up. Not in my right mind. You understand that, of course."
He looked intently at Mrs. Hargreaves, shook his head, and said, "Is your name Alice?"
"Why, yes," she said, smiling and becoming beautiful, hair or no hair.
"How did you know? Have I met you? No, I don't think so."
"Alice Pleasance Little Hargreaves?"
"Yes."
"I have to go sit down," the American said. He walked under the tree and sat down with his back to the trunk. His eyes looked a little glazed.
"Aftershock," Burton said.
He could expect such erratic behavior and speech from the others for some time. He could expect a certain amount of non-rational behavior from himself, too. The important thing was to get shelter and food and some plan for common defense. Burton spoke in Italian and Slovenian to the others, and then made the introductions. They didn't protest when he suggested that they should follow him down to the river's edge.
"I'm sure we're all thirsty," he said, "and we should investigate that stone mushroom."
They walked back to the plain behind them. The people were sitting on the grass or milling about. They passed one couple arguing loudly and red-facedly. Apparently they had been husband and wife and were continuing a lifelong dispute. Suddenly the man turned and walked away. The wife looked unbelievingly at him and then ran after him. He thrust her away so violently that she fell on the grass. He quickly lost himself in the crowd, but the woman wandered around, calling his name and threatening to make a scandal if he didn't come out of hiding. Burton thought briefly of his own wife, Isabel. He hadn't seen her in this crowd, though that didn't mean that she was not in it. But she would have been looking for him. She wouldn't stop until she found him. He pushed through the crowd to the river's edge, and then got down on his knees and scooped up water with his hands. It was cool and clear and refreshing. His stomach felt as if it were absolutely empty. After he had satisfied his thirst, he became hungry.
"The waters of the River of Life," Burton said. "The Styx? Lethe? No, not Lethe. I remember everything about my earthly existence."
"I wish I could forget mine," Frigget said.
Alice Hargreaves was kneeling by the edge and dipping water with one hand while she leaned on the other arm. Her figure was certainly lovely, Burton thought. He wondered if she would be blonde when her hair grew out, if it grew out. Perhaps whoever had put them here intended they should all be bald, forever, for some reason of theirs. They climbed upon the top of the nearest mushroom structure. The granite was a dense-grained gray flecked heavily with red. On its flat surface were 700 indentations forming 50 concentric circles. The depression in the center held a metal cylinder. A little dark-skinned man with a big nose and receding chin was examining the cylinder. As they approached, he looked up and smiled.
"This one won't open," he said in German. "Perhaps it will later. I'm sure it's there as an example of what to do with our own containers."
He introduced himself as Lev Ruach and switched to a heavily accented English when Burton, Frigget, and Hargreaves gave their names.
"I was an atheist," he said, seeming to speak to himself more than to them. "Now, I don't know. This place is as big a shock to an atheist, you know, as to those devout believers who had pictured an afterlife quite different from this. Well, so I was wrong. It wouldn't be the first time."
He chuckled and said to Monat,
"I recognized you at once. It's a good thing for you that you were resurrected in a group mainly consisting of people who died in the 19th century. Otherwise you'd be lynched."
"Why is that?" Burton asked. "He killed Earth," Frigget said. "At least, I think he did."
"The scanner," Monet said dolefully, was adjusted to kill only human beings. And it would not have exterminated all of mankind. It would have ceased operating after a predetermined number, unfortunately a large number, had lost their lives. Believe me, my friends, I didn't want to do that. You do not know what an agony it cost me to make the decision to press the button. But I had to protect my people. You forced my hand. It started when Monat was on a live show, Frigate said. Monat made an unfortunate remark. He said that his scientists had the knowledge and ability to keep people from getting old. Theoretically, using Tau Seton techniques, a man could live forever. But the knowledge was not used on his planet. It was forbidden.